Super Gaming Best Friends. Super Gaming Best Friends. Monkey throwing barrels. Hunting ducks with dogs of scenarios, and we'll play with you.
Hey, what's up? I'm a totally new host for Super Gaming Best Friends. It's Wednesday, October 17th, 2012. I'm your host tonight, Justin Lacey. This is the video game podcast from HorribleNight.com, where the staff gathers together to talk about the games that we have been playing. And joining me tonight, from Berlin, of course, Ethan Moses.
Good evening.
How's it going, Ethan?
That's going good. It's going good. I just come out of my UFO defense haze, so it's kind of weird to be talking to people, actually, instead of yelling at the computer screen, so glad to be on the show.
Are you feeling pretty prepared for the alien invasion?
Yeah, as long as, you know, the tech tree is updated in a very precise way, I should be fine.
Okay. And also joining us tonight for the first time in a while, Justin Gifford.
Howdy, fellas.
How's things been going? How's the game life been?
The game life has been all Borderlands all the time, more or less since it came out, because I want all of the guns. Other than that, you know.
That might be a fruitless endeavor.
There's what, several gazillion, 70 gazillion guns. Mm-hmm. There's just been, we're looking at buying a house, which means we're upgrading our house, which means my life has been games or home improvement or house shopping stuff, and that's pretty much it. All of it.
You probably shouldn't waste your time watching Home Improvement. You've got to move and prepare for moving.
Taking part in Home
Improvement. Oh, okay. I thought you were a big JTT fan.
Too soon. That was Jonathan Brandis. JTT still alive, right?
Yeah, it's like JTT is alive. I guess he's well, but he's alive. I've not heard anything otherwise. So, we're here to talk about video games. So let's kick this off with our on-the-spot question. This question that you can submit to Horrible Night via ask@horriblenight.com or hit us up on Twitter at Horrible Night. Tonight's question is, why are we so damn excited about this new SimCity game? It's just another SimCity game, but I'm pretty damn excited, but I haven't been able to put those to words, so I'm hoping we can do that right now. Gifford, what's your initial take?
My initial take, aside from the whole this is why you should build fire departments thing, no, I'm not going to go off on that tangent. But aside from that, I love SimCity. I remember, cheating, that's what it is. Back in the day where I would get my town just slightly profitable and leave the computer on overnight at the highest speed. So,
shit.
Like, the next evening I would have hundreds of millions of dollars to do what I wanted to do in my budget.
You mean strategy?
Right, that too, strategery. So, I don't know. I'm psyched to play it. You know, I had Civ 3 and I skipped Civ 4. So, like, 4 years go by and then I play Civ 5 and I'm like, wow, this isn't just another sequel, it's awesomer. So the last SimCity I played was SimCity 2000, which wasn't a big improvement on SimCity.
Okay.
But it's been, we're going close to 2 decades?
Yeah, I was wondering what the, like, it seems to be just across the board, everyone has mutual excitement for this, and I was like, I don't know why this doesn't seem like just another SimCity sequel to us, but I think, you know, my heavy SimCity days were probably the Super Nintendo version and whatever the PC version was around that. I didn't even play SimCity 2000, but like you mentioned, Civilization V was kind of like, a resurgence of that franchise. And then we just had XCOM Enemy Unknown released, and here comes another SimCity. And I think strategy fans are being taken care of. Ethan, you got anything to add?
Well, I was going to say, this is the, I mean, this is kind of the resurgence of strategy games, especially strategy games that are, you know, turn-based or slower or, you know, basically these aren't first-person shooters, and none of us that really liked those games back in the day thought we'd ever see them again. I mean, that was kind of, you know, a lot of people even said turn-based is dead, you know, and, you know, and then you had the Farmville and the Cityville come out, and you're like, is this what, you know, the city building simulator has turned into? And then it was nice to see the, you know, the new SimCities coming out, and I think that, you know, the way they're handling multiplayer is interesting, you know, in terms of you'll be able to have, you know, people kind of influence your city in one way or another based on, you know, their proximity. Yeah. And just, and you know, that, and there's a lot of nostalgia to that game. I mean, it's not a violent game. Now, you know, things can happen, obviously, you know, disasters happen, but it's kind of a chill game that you can just sit and watch. And I too, like Gifford, you know, kept the things on all night and waited till I had as much money as I possibly could and just made the most amazing city. But I mean, it's almost like, you're just a lot, you know, more calm. You're looking at things going on. You see the little people driving around, and it's great. It's therapeutic almost, zen-like.
There's something really charming too about the art style. Like I don't know it. I don't know. They just released their disaster trailer, and we posted that on the site. And it's just, I don't know. You know, you've got tornadoes, earthquakes, UFOs, and what was the other one? Meteors. And I'm just laughing as this town gets destroyed. Like, there's, like, I should be, granted, I'll probably be crying if that happens to my city, but there's still something in the presentation that they still manage to make these disasters somewhat entertaining. And I don't know, just, I haven't been interested in a sim game in a long time. And the charm seems to be stronger than ever too.
Oh yeah.
You know, I have to wonder. You know, the turn-based games, I think, are it's the easiest transition from like a board game or a card game. And I'm totally speculating here. I have no basis for this.
That's welcome here.
Right. I gotta wonder if those games, one of the reasons they were so popular early on in the early Windows days. It was an easy transition, and then, you know, the first-person shooter grows up and kind of takes over, and then we have this resurgence of card games. I played quite a few of them at a wedding the other day. It was a unique wedding, but still, it was cool. And then there's, Cards Against Humanity are popular. I mean, there are a lot of these card games which are not suit-based card games that are suddenly becoming popular again. I feel like with the 30-plus or near 30-plus age group, maybe that explains some of it. That's the same age group you're looking at with the people who enjoyed Civ 3 in post-college or during college. And it's the same people who remember playing XCOM when they were a kid.
Maybe we just need a change of pace?
Yeah. Also, it's easy to pause. It's easy to pause or save.
Yeah.
A turn-based game, like, you know where you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think there's a weird connection I always thought of between simulation games and turn-based games, because that audience again seemed to be the audience that, you know, nobody was really going after, and now they're going after them pretty hard. So I mean, I've never talked to somebody that you know, likes a turn-based game. It doesn't like, you know, SimCity, you know, so there's this weird connection. And again, we're kind of coming full circle on the whole PC thing, is that, you know, the PC, which was dead, isn't so dead right now. And I think the people that are making PC games, especially in the indie scene, are starting to go after those kind of people, or, you know, go after the old PC gamer, I guess, if you will. And some of those companies that have been around for a while or have taken on franchises know that they can't put a shitty game past people, and that's why the SimCity looks as good as it does and has the potential that it does. The same with XCOM and Civ. It's PC gamers aren't the type that are going to be too happy about seeing their favorite franchise get fucked up. You know, I mean, we all saw what happened to the XCOM game that was supposed to come out, which may or may not ever come out. So again, I think that it's. I think the other good thing about SimCity that excites me, just like with the XCOM, is that they're doing it like you should have done it. You know, they're not trying to throw this whole social gaming aspect into it. It's how, you know, you're getting your store-bought copy and you can, you know, play the game and not have to worry about everybody else. Though, that aspect of thing, the multiplayer, is cool, but they didn't go in the direction they could have.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you actually fuck with people in the multiplayer?
I kind of get the impression that, you know, like, maybe your crime, like, if you start shifting your crime outside, I mean, you know, you think about, like, real city building, I mean, how most things happen is as a city prospers,
you do they the push opposite.
Yeah, like
they push. The suburban flight, you just... You force the less fortunate to the outside, so they emigrate to another city.
What if you, like, or you have, like, I don't know, better businesses, and you start taking away the population, and, like, and, or, yeah, you just get all, you get all the, your city gets all the shitty franchises, because it can't maintain any original businesses.
It was like what Indiana did to Illinois, you know, they put a bunch of, you know, signs up on the interstates and said, bring your business over here, we're a lot cheaper. I mean, I'm sure that kind of stuff, you know, and maybe it's not as fun as, like, sneaking up and blasting someone with a gun, but I mean, it's like a more intelligent way to kind of fuck with your friends. So, yeah, I hope that kind of stuff happens. I hope it's not, you know, just, you know, some kind of, you know, kind of lame gimmick. But even if it was, again, the single player experience is what makes that game great. And again, it's a chill type game.
Unless you get one action, and then you can, you know, trigger an alien attack.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. That I think that may have been a lot more fun when I was 12, but still. Yeah.
Well, I think Ethan City's probably going to be modeled after and turn out like Gary, Indiana. Gifford, what are you targeting?
Vancouver without the hockey.
Pick the local sports team.
Yeah. Gary without the hockey as well, just to add to that.
Sorry, Canada.
Yeah.
I think you're great, but hockey's stupid.
So SimCity comes out February 2013, PC and Mac. It's going to be a busy busy going into spring season there. So just as you recover from this year's holiday releases, there'll be plenty to sift through next year. But maybe, you know, you'll be done fending off the alien invasions and you want to rebuild, and then SimCity's your chance to make that happen.
Oh, yeah. That's a really...
Ethan, you have 6 months.
I was going to say.
All right. Let's move forward to why everyone is here. Everyone is listening with great anticipation because they want to know what the hell have we been playing. It's a new segment. It's a little different than Josh's What Are You Playing? But Ethan, what games have you been playing?
Well, it's obvious I have to start off with XCOM Enemy Unknown. I had to wait a little bit longer than all of you in North America. I didn't get my copy unlocked until a Friday, though I was tempted to try to unlock it early, but I didn't risk it. I didn't want to risk it. But it's safe to say that I've already put in about 25 hours into it, so I've made some time back, and I even went on a trip this past weekend. So I'm so happy with that game. It's not even funny. They did a great job with it. I remember Josh saying last week that he's almost hoping he's almost has lower expectations for the game, so he wouldn't be disappointed. And I was kind of feeling the same way because, again, as we talked about, you know, turn based people weren't really pursuing that genre. And when I got into it, at first I was a little bit turned off by the tutorial. I don't want to do it. I wanted to get in the action, but it worked perfectly to introduce how the game works. And then that basically once you were out of the tutorial section, you were on your own doing the researching, doing the battles and doing the, you know, the ship to ship combat. I mean, everything felt like the original, though very, very well polished. And I'm really pleased. I'm pleasantly surprised with it. So it's been fun in it. And I forgot about my XCOM issue and that I have not put 8 hours into a game for a long, long time.
Like a solid block.
Wow.
Like, are we talking about blackout gaming? Like you look at the clock and you're like, oh
yeah, I woke up Friday. See, Friday at 8 o'clock, made Aubrey coffee before she went to work and sat down in front of the game. I was like, you know, I need to get some stuff done before I do it. But I thought, you know, you're going to play for a little bit, but you don't play XCOM like that. So I sat down and I looked up and it was 2:30, you know, and I was supposed to chit chat with one of my buddies on Skype, and he had messaged me through Steam and said, hey, you know, I'll let you finish your game. And I was like, nah, you can't let me finish the game because I'll be playing it all night. So it's definitely a time sink. And I've actually found myself playing it different than I thought I was going to. Now, you know, as you know, you can go in, you've got the Iron Man mode, the classic difficulty. And I actually went into it on normal without Iron Man mode.
What's Iron Man mode?
Yeah,
Iron Man mode is your every decision you make, there's an autosave that occurs every time you make a decision shit. Or we go into a battle. So your soldiers die, you don't have that save and reload type thing that is what kind of makes XCOM. There's kind of two different ways to play XCOM. There's the first kind of the training course, which is what I wanted to do, because once I get fully immersed in it, I like to go Iron Man classic difficulty. But I wanted to figure out how the game worked, you know, if it was different from the original XCOM, which there's some differences. There's no time points and some of those little subtle things. But, I've actually enjoyed getting to know the game. I don't want to throw myself into that challenge quite yet. And it's still challenging nonetheless, but I can only imagine what will be waiting for me once I actually get into the meat and potatoes of the classic mode where your guys are dying every other round. And, you know, you play it a lot differently. So, I mean, you can play the game completely different ways at that point. You know, I'm playing right now as I'm just trying to become the greatest UFO defender on the planet. But when you play it with the Iron Man mode, you're basically just saving your ass, you know, doing your best to, you know, make sure that, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you're going to lose cities. You're going to piss countries off. You're going to not cities, countries. You're going to lose soldiers every round. If you make it out with one guy, that's probably not a bad thing. I mean, just, you know, and you're going to actually fail, you know, which is I'm kind of conflicted because I'm so used to games where you don't want to die. You want to get everything researched and you want to do the best. And
do you know
I need to get back into that.
You know what happens when you fail on Iron Man? Does it just end?
I'm not quite sure.
Okay. I was just curious.
I'm trying to think I remember in the regular XCOM when you would get to a point where you said, I can't do shit. Like, there's nothing that you can do. Mm-hmm. Basically, if you lose countries, because if the panic level of the country goes too high, you lose that country and it no longer funds your XCOM program. So that I believe would probably just end the whole thing. You know, that's kind of how it worked in the original XCOM, but I never got to a point where everybody was out, you know, like you were fucked, you know, there's no reason to put any time and effort into it. So, but I'll be curious. But again, that's when it goes from having a good time and being obsessed with it to total, again, just like, you know, Gifford said, blackout obsession when you get in that Iron Man mode, because that game will piss you off. Like, it'll fucking piss you off. And that's, it's good. It's there's almost like a roguelike aspect to it. You know, it's you're not able to really, you don't want to invest too much time and effort into any given person because they're going to die. Like, they will die. You're going to lose your best guy randomly.
I'm actually kind of surprised that you're not a little bit more torn up than you are. Like, you're riding a high right now, but I know you, Ethan. You get emotionally attached to your video game characters, and not that I'm doubting your XCOM skills, even though if you're playing on normal, but I know you've lost some friends.
I've lost a ton of guys and gals too. I'm trying to, again, I'm in this mentality where I'm taking a lot of risks because, again, if I lose people, it's, you know, I can reload or whatever. I have told myself, though, I will only reload to the very beginning of a level. I won't reload continuously throughout the level. So mini Iron Man mode. But I had a sniper and doing well, just killing everybody. And there's these creatures called chrysalids, which are just insect type creatures, and they are very fast and they're on you quick. And that when they attack you, they also poison you. And if you die from that poison, you turn into a zombie. And not only did I lose one of my best guys who'd been with me for a while, I ended up having to shoot him and kill him. Take him down because he was the living dead. He was coming after me.
I was going to say, I heard there's a next step in that as well. Like, if you don't kill the zombies,
if you don't kill the zombies, then they turn into chrysalids.
That's just fucking mean.
It is mean.
So, just from hearing you talk about this, I feel like maybe I don't suck at the original XCOM as bad as I thought I did. Like, I remember playing that and being like, fuck, I got like 3/4 of my team killed and I didn't even kill all the aliens. So you're saying that's normal? You beat the first XCOM.
It's normal.
Right?
It's normal.
It's normal. I mean, there's a happy medium between like you don't want to lose too many guys, but you know, like let's say you in the original XCOM you had to or in XCOM Terror from the Deep you had to stun one of the top aliens to be able to even beat the game to get to the last level of the game. So like you almost like you weigh your options. Like okay, I lost 75% of my team, but I got this guy and this was tough, you know. And so you're like, yeah, okay, I can recruit new soldiers or whatnot. So I think everybody really sucked at XCOM. You know, there's an aspect of randomness that happens with it too. You know, like even in this game, like I had a guy who had beads on an enemy 95% and completely missed, and then that enemy just blew the guy to pieces. I mean, it's definitely got that element of randomness, and that's what makes the strategy work so well. Because I mean, it's not a run and gun type game, obviously, and this is not a game for somebody who's used to kind of even playing some of the more tactical shooters, you know. It's definitely requires patience, a lot of patience. And actually, the squad in general, I kind of was like a little bit disconcerted by the fact that, the squad size was much smaller. In the original XCOM and XCOM Terror from the Deep, you had huge squads. I mean, you were rolling deep. In this, you have six, but it's manageable. Because I remember in the original, there'd come a point where you had to direct everybody and it took freaking forever. And so this is kind of a good way to kind of cut down the wasted time. And there was a lot of time in the original XCOM that was wasted time. And in this game, they definitely polished all of that. So
I was going to say, you're pretty close to the original XCOM games. And so you're at least noticing the differences in Enemy Unknown from some of the features of the originals. Do you think they've, like in your opinion, have they made kind of smart cuts? Is there anything you particularly miss or think they got really right?
I think the smaller squads is probably what I think they got. That's probably the better decision I think they made, and people will probably burn me at the stake for saying that, because I mean, big squads was kind of the thing. I think one of the issues I kind of have is how the research works. Is in the original, XCOM, you could allocate scientists to do multiple different research projects, and then this one you pick one at a time and you wait for it to cycle through. So that's a little bit, I don't love that. I also, I think that the way they did the base management is a lot better now, because in the original you made multiple bases and you had to, make sure that all those bases had enough units and enough, planes and that kind of stuff. And which was, there was a lot of depth to that, but it got kind of, insane after a while. And in this one, you launch satellites and that's how you monitor things. So I think that worked really well too. Though again, I'm sure there's a lot of people back, from the old XCOM days that want to make completely new building or new bases. I love the ant farm model. That is an incredible, incredible thing. It looks awesome just to see all the little things going on. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of something really, really stand out that I think the combat, the way it looks and the way it feels, is probably the highlight, because it's really fun to see things happen. Going back to the whole chrysalid thing, because those are the enemies that I hate to love, I guess. But there's terror missions where you're trying to protect people, and so the aliens are going after the people, and you get more points or based on how many people you can save. But in the third person camera mode, which I'm still a little bit leery of, the chrysalids pop up and grab the person and like rip their throat out and throw them onto the ground. And it's just like it's cinematic and it's like really cool. And those little touches. I mean, again, it feels better. It's more interesting to watch, I think. And graphically, obviously, it's a lot better. But XCOM, the original, again, it was a little bit plain, and obviously because it was made, eons ago. But still, it didn't always feel satisfying when you killed something back then. It would, you'd see the little beams pop off and then, oh, it's dead. In this one, I mean, you hit something and it lets off this shriek and and then blood pops up and it flies back and you're like, man, that feels good. Like that felt good. Like you get a good critical hit, you feel fucking good. You get a little bit of a wood, a little bit of an XCOM wood, but
So, I know you guys both played this a little bit, Ethan, you played it more than a little, but
yeah.
In terms of the research, because I remember how much of a pain in the ass that was to manage in the first two, in XCOM and then in Terror from the Deep. From what you're talking about Enemy Unknown, it sounds did they kind of adopt the Civ approach with that? You know, there's a tech tree and you research one, and there's a certain amount of time and then that's done. It's not like I'm going to apply three scientists to this and two to that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It's streamlined, it seems.
I was going to say, I found it very reminiscent of, just in this presentation, very reminiscent of Civ's turns, because basically you set up all your research and any projects you have basically going on, and whether it's like calling in, hiring new soldiers or whatever, they all take, or waiting for injuries to heal, they all take several days. But as soon as you get everything set up and you go to, you know, the mission control, and you basically scan for alien activity, and the timer starts going really quick, and you can almost, what went through my head was the Civ phrase of, you know, just one more turn, and the presentation has a little bit of that, and I don't know if that's in the original XCOM, if it did that kind of scanning scenario.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like time, so you could control how quickly the time went by. And again, it seems more linear than I think the original XCOM and XCOM Terror from the Deep was. And again, I haven't gotten, I feel like I'm relatively far into the game, but you know, I remember in those games, like, you know, there was certain decisions you would make early on, and maybe you'd have more access to like this weapon than this weapon. And in this game, it seems like you kind of have to get all of this stuff lined up. You know, it's more of a progression as opposed to different, you know, directions you can go in terms of the tech tree. Don't quote me on that, because I'm sure people have gone about it completely different. But instead, what they focused on is, you know, when building the base, you know, what sort of facilities you put in the base, and that's going to determine how cheap things are to produce or how quickly you research. So again, I mean, it was a hit or miss in terms of the original, because you weren't sure, like, should I research this dead body or should I research this weapon? And sometimes the dead body would, you know, yield better results than the actual weapon. So
right.
This one's a little bit more concise. It's a little bit more clear. But again, I think old school XCOM guys are going to be like, it's not like it was. I mean, you know, it's okay. It's good.
What, somebody got hurt on the internet?
I actually haven't heard too much of that. I mean, it sounds like it's getting kind of global praise. I mean, I know there will be the detractors, but as a new XCOM person, as someone that didn't really know about XCOM when it was around and when I was around it, and has been too intimidated to go back to it, I found Enemy Unknown pretty damn welcoming. It's also been a nice change of pace for me as far as the different types of games I've been playing. One, from just the genre of sci-fi and aliens. I haven't played very many of those games recently, so that's kind of refreshing. But also just from the tutorial setup, I feel like it's introducing me to all of its systems at a pace that I can understand and appreciate. So I'm not intimidated yet. I know the game gets really deep and gets really hard, but I'm probably only 3 or 4 hours into it, and 5 or 6 missions that I keep redoing because I don't want anybody to die, because I may have named all my characters after our Horrible Nights writers, and I might have a problem. But yeah. Also, we need more girl writers, I've decided, because the girls keep popping up in my squad. And yeah, anyway, the other thing I found out like later in my play session is I was actually a little bit, I wouldn't say frustrated, but disenchanted with the keyboard and mouse controls. I did get this on PC. It just, even though it seems to be doing fine on consoles, but it seemed to me like this is a game you need to play on PC. So I went to keyboard and mouse, and everything controlled okay. Then I gave the controller input a chance, and it is fucking fantastic.
Really?
Like, night and day difference. It's just really streamlined. Firaxis has, you know, they had experience developing Civ Revolution and getting used to kind of controller input, and I think it really shows in their UI. And like I said, it was night and day difference, and as far as just ease of playing and doing simple repetitive tasks with the controller was much easier than on the mouse and keyboard.
I'm glad you brought that up just because, you know, I've got a PC that's good enough to play basically anything on a decent setting, but my wife loves the hell out of Sims 3 and has since discovered specials on Origin. and I made friends with somebody who works at EA on Sims 3. So I wanted to ask, I mean, it doesn't sound like either of you guys have had any experience playing on the console, but since that's probably my best option for, you know, household happiness, I may end up playing it on console. So it makes me feel a lot more confident to hear that Firaxis seems to have really gotten a grasp on the controller interface instead of mouse keyboard.
I highly recommend it.
I was going to say
that's something with a turn-based can be hard to master the interface. On the other hand, turn-based, at least I think, seems to lend itself more to a semi-equal experience across PC and console from the standpoint that graphics are not the point of the game or super high frame rate is not the point of the game. So, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Well, and I was actually surprised. That was one thing. I was surprised with the keyboard mouse controls. The camera has some issues in the game, definitely, and that is only exacerbated by the keyboard mouse setup for some reason because, you know, especially when you're in multi-level, ships or buildings, you can't – there's like this weird in-between camera that can't quite decide where it wants to be. Yeah. I looked into it and figured maybe the controller would be the best option at that point, which is kind of weird. It's kind of weird for me to wrap my head around that, but it's set up well. And the game is built so well that it, you know, there wouldn't be that much of a difference at all to it.
No,
so.
I mean, it wasn't at a breaking point or anything for me, but I knew that since they'd, you know, taken time to port it to consoles, that maybe the controller was worth trying. And turns out, like, it's much more enjoyable for me. And I think it will be across the board. Like I've said, I've played enough PC games and console games, especially, you know, I've got a handful that I've played out on both. And usually, you know, if it's like a true PC game, which is what XCOM's Origin really is, I just kind of just made that assumption. And I was surprised to find out that the controller worked out that well. So
that's cool. Cool.
What else have you been playing, Ian?
You know, actually, I played being in Germany, I don't have communication with my family as often as, you know, I used to. And so I'm trying to find unique ways to keep in contact. Well, both my brothers play, you know, video games, and both of them have Steam. And Nathan and I actually played Dead Island last week. And one, I didn't think I'd be able to play Dead Island in Germany because it's one of the few games that have been completely banned here. I think that ban is still up, or it's still going on. But hey, I was surprised to be able to play, and he and I played that game. And I actually played a majority of my time with that game was single player, which seems weird, but I play games single player, you know, that's regardless of whether or not you're supposed to. That's usually how I do it outside of, you know, the competitive shooters or whatnot. But he and I played, and wow, that game just turns into a different experience when you're playing with somebody. You know, it's better? So much more fun. Oh, absolutely better. And I really enjoyed Dead Island. The only reason I stopped playing was probably because another game came out and I got distracted, like tends to happen. But it was really cool because actually the game has this RPG level to it that, you know, your characters have those roles that you don't really think about. I mean, you've got your tank, you've got your guy that can, you know, shoot weapons better. You've got your girl that goes into a berserker rage and it becomes invincible and slices stuff up. And I didn't realize there was that level to it. You know, I've been, you know, enhancing my character and all that kind of stuff and picking up new weapons. But, you know, Nathan's character was the girl that's a blade expert and he just went ape shit on zombies, you know, and it was like, oh, that was kind of cool. I would, you know, get all the attention from all the zombies and he would go into it. So
how does comics knowledge help with fighting off zombies?
Comics knowledge?
She's a blade expert. Never mind. Move on. Josh Lee would be so disappointed in me.
Wesley Snipes movie expert? I don't know.
I'm sorry. I should catch those things.
I completely derailed you. I'm proud of that.
Oh, no, that's okay. Well, no, actually, when he and I were playing, it's funny because, you know, my wife was like, oh, what's good that you get to catch up with Nathan? I was like, yeah, it is good, even though, like, we weren't talking about, like, day-to-day, you know, happenings. We were fighting zombies. And doing important things. Yeah, exactly. And she was like, oh, how's Nathan doing? I go, I don't know. Like, his character's well, you know, he's picked some really good, you know, stat enhancements for his character. He's got a really cool blade that, like, just kills everything with one hit. But she's like, well, how are the kids? I mean, you know, my brother has twins. I should probably ask about that kind of stuff. But it's so weird. Like, it's this lame excuse for playing video games with people online. And it's almost like you can validate that to a non-gamer by saying, oh, I'm keeping in contact with people.
It's like when we all hang out and podcast and then hang out outside of it. Like, I don't actually know what's going on with your lives, even mm-hmm. though we talk on a weekly basis. But,
yeah,
like, no. Yeah, I have no idea how Ethan's doing. I know which games he's playing. I don't know how the hell he's doing.
That's the thing. And it's almost like, you know, I'm like, oh, is that like kind of a shallow kind of relationship to have with people? But we're guys, and guys don't ask about that shit anyway. So instead of like acting like, you know, we're interested in the sports that everyone's talking about, we're actually really interested in the games that we're playing. So that was just kind of a funny way, you know.
Unless there's like so much going on in his life that you just notice that he is suddenly much more terrible or better at a game.
That's like, when you can tell. You know, yeah, that's when you ask. Are you okay?
You never miss headshots like that. What's going on, man?
I think that applies beyond games. I mean, like, so somebody doesn't know your home team's like their record and their quarterback's rating. Yeah. Or that's how guys notice this kind of thing.
I guess that's
notice the thing that you're laser focused on outside of work. Clearly something is deeply wrong with you. Well, how can I help, my friend?
I mean, somebody could write a book on that. Like, I mean, that's like, you know, again, when you're kind of – my communication to people back home is through the computer. And, you know, you'd think that adding that level of gaming makes it a little bit more difficult. And maybe I'm not getting all those details. But yet, like, I knew that the kids weren't sleeping well. I knew that the kids weren't sleeping well. You know what I mean? Or like when I, you know, Hiddle and I played Orcs Must Die 2 a couple times, and both of us were kind of like, are you okay? You know, and one day I hadn't slept well, and he could tell because I made some shitty, you know, trap placements. So it's kind of weird. It's kind of like the psychology of the, you know, the co-op gaming partners. So
I think that's male psychology, Ethan. I mean, yeah. We're all group hunters, man.
Yeah.
You can tell when somebody misses a spear throw.
Exactly. So, but yeah, that game, if you haven't played that game, I feel like it's always on sale. Unless you're in Germany, then, you know, it's too bad you can't play it. But great game. And I always like to play a game and then realize that it's not a single player game. And mm-hmm. it's that much better when you play multiplayer. So it's almost like I get two experiences. I mean,
sure.
Did the same thing with Left 4 Dead. Like, I played Left 4 Dead all the way through by myself. Oh, and then God. I played with my little brother. Yeah,
me too. I'm with you.
Yeah, so it's weird. It's just like, oh, I get two games. Everybody starts with multiplayer. You go to the single player, like, this sucks. It's like, I start with the single player. This is pretty neat. Whoa, this is a fucking lot of fun. This is great. Like, people interacting in games. It's awesome. So.
Hey, man, you know, as big of a Mass Effect fan as I am, playing Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, every time I play it, I go, Jesus, if my squad was 3 other living people, oh, I could just demolish this game. I would never die.
What else have you been playing, Ethan?
So I've kept going with Secret World, and I in August when I first got over here and first got my computer, I saw all the games that were coming out. I really questioned whether or not I was going to stick with it because, you know, the weird thing about – and this is kind of how I was with World of Warcraft is I would step away and I'd be like, well, why did I spend so much time with that game? I gave it another shot because I just felt like I needed to. You know, you pay the subscription fee and you get into it. And I actually – it's kind of like a go-to MMO. Like, I have a go-to MMO now. Like, I guess finally. It's been a while. And I'm like doing dungeon runs and shit. Like, I think I'm in that group of people. And I never thought that I would be one to be like that. And in fact, I learned something about myself playing dungeons is I understand now why people get really pissed off when people don't know what the fuck they're doing in those games. I was embarrassed because I was. So in this game, you know, you have the open world and you've got, you know, the little investigation missions and stuff like that. And that's kind of run its course with me. So I've kind of moved on to the next half of things, which is, you know, the multiplayer and the dungeons and the, you know, the faction versus faction. And in doing dungeons, you know, there's a few of them that need a little bit more strategy than just pointing and shooting and whatnot. And I'm always one to, you know, play a dungeon with someone who hasn't done it yet, because it's actually one issue, and this may be an issue for all MMOs, but you know, it's kind of tough to find a group of people to play with if you're newer to the game, mm-hmm. or maybe you don't have the best, you know, equipment or whatnot. So I try to make sure that people, you know, I'm like, hey guys, you know, you haven't played it yet, let's all get in here and do this.
It's funny how small that window of time to actually learn stuff like that is in any game. Yeah. I mean, that's why WoW is almost untouchable at this point, because like when I went back to play it when Cataclysm came out, and I wasn't a noob, but I wanted to approach it from I want to enjoy this content. I want to like take it all in. But people just sprint through that shit and assume that you know what you're doing. If you don't, you get kicked, and it's just I can only imagine that window has shut for the Secret World. So finding somebody like you to play with is probably a rare thing.
And that's what it kind of sucked, because I mean, when I first started playing, I remember a month into the game, because I got, you know, so it was in July and I had to ship my computer over August, you know, like August 10th or something. So I remember playing in August and I maybe took 2 weeks off and people were like yelling noob at me and shit like that. Like that quickly with that, because the people that play those games have a lot of time to dedicate to it. I have a lot of time to dedicate to it, but I like to play other games and do other things as well. So, you know, I mean, you got to have at least one person in the whole universe of that game that actually will, you know, say, hey, come on, come play with me, whatnot. But that being said, oh, man, like I have to be cautious, because like, you know, you get into it and you put a lot of time into those dungeons and stuff. I mean, it does take a little bit of time. You know, it may take half an hour, may take an hour, may take longer than that. And when people are just goofing off and being kind of dumb, I mean, you get a little bit, I don't know, I didn't find myself getting like mad, but it was like kind of frustrating, because you know, like, you know, I think it's always lame when people like don't have fun when they're playing a game, but I do realize that like you don't have a whole lot of time, and when you do have the time and someone's goofing around, it's a little bit annoying, and I kind of realize that side of things now. I'm not going to be one of these people that's like, oh, you know, you, that was a bad move, and never you know, hang out with people again or kick someone for being, you know, just not as good at the game as at the game. But It is. There's an aspect of frustration. So it's kind of good to see that side of things, because I always found myself not that I wouldn't take, you know, multiplayer gaming seriously. I would, you know, maybe goof off a little bit, or, you know, make comments in the text section or whatnot. And I don't really do that anymore. So I don't know if it's good that I'm getting into it, or maybe it's bad, you know, that side is kind of taken over. But I think I'm going to stick with that game, because I'm pretty sure it's going to become free to play within the next 6 months. Yeah. And that being said, I'm almost like, you know, I'm like, should I stop the subscription? But I'm like, nah, I want to stick with it, because I don't like when everyone starts playing at that point, because it seems a little bit slim, the population, then I'll be a god and people will rely on me. You know, no, I don't think I'll ever get to that. But
I think that although you're talking about an MMO, I think that's the multiplayer world writ large to a certain degree. Yeah. And it's unless there's a game where. And I'm going to use Mass Effect 3, because I've played the multiplayer on that more than I have probably anything since the original Gears of War. Uh-huh. I think I'm kind of like you in the extent that I got into it early enough, and seriously early enough, that that I didn't have an issue of somebody being like, oh, noob, kick him. But I'm more than happy to play with somebody who doesn't know what they're doing and be like, hey, you might want to try this, or quit wasting that, or blah, 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 without yelling at them, because, you know, you lose a mission, whatever. But, you know, that can be really frustrating, hopping into multiplayer, and then you've got guys who maybe they're not using glitches, but they know the little tricks, and if you don't do the little trick or know your role inherently, that can be really frustrating and turn you off to multiplayer. So I think to a certain degree, there's a little bit of, you know, Gabriel's greater fuckwad theory going on there. Like, look, Yeah, it can be frustrating, especially when you have a limited amount of time to play and it's a game that you love playing. But y'all settle down. Like, you didn't know that trick. Somebody taught you that. Unless you're the guy who, unless you're the fucking guy who invented it, in which case, feel free to be an asshole, or you can have somebody raise $1 million in your name to make the Tesla Museum. That was an Edison joke. But, you know, I think it's worth remembering that when you're playing. Like, somebody taught you the trick.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, so it's Ethan, when an this aspect goes, of patience.
When this goes free to play, it's okay if you feel like you're a god, but just don't be a dick.
You know, I found myself, like, every time I'm a nice guy, almost too nice probably a lot of the time. And I never got to the point where I wanted to yell at somebody. It was always like, you know how, like, you think you're going to say something really mean to someone, really put them in their place, and you end up kind of like complimenting them in a way, like your constructive criticism comes out really, like, that's what I do. Like, I was like, hey man, like, you know, just stick with me. Like, that's the meanest thing I say in this game. You know, I realize, like, I don't think there could be a point, no matter how into the game I get, because I have these, like, you know, these level checks, you know, in my brain. My brain's like, wait a second, Ethan, what are you doing? You're nice. Chill out. And so like the meanest thing I'll tell you, if you ever play multiplayer with me, regardless of what I'm thinking on the inside, the meanest thing I'll ever say to you is, hey, good try. That's the meanest thing I'll say to you. That probably, like, I said that to somebody that I felt bad. Like, I apologize. Like, I messaged, I said, that was out of line with that. They were like, actually, no, that was a really nice thing to say. Like I really did try really well, and you noticed that everybody else was being a dick. So, you know, I think compared to all the other dicks in those games, I'm probably the guy you want to play with.
Wow. I compared to how I am at work, I'm apparently the nicest guy in multiplayer ever.
Yep. Perma ban for saying, hey, good try.
Yeah.
Gifford, it has been forever since we caught up on your gaming library. I don't even know where you can start, but lay it on us.
Yeah, it's been forever. We had that whole business where we were playing games, and I had to go through a lot of them in a big hurry, which was a little uncomfortable, kind of like new underwear. I also got a new tablet, which means I could play new games, and Google Play sort of, I don't know, I don't want to say took off, but it solidified. So why don't we start with a couple of tablet games? Several of two of the three were
Ethan, hold on, buddy. Tablet games. You've got a friend now.
Two of the three are not new. We saw them on PC, and one of them was Cannibalt, which works well, just as well on a tablet as it does on a PC. I mean, you touch the screen instead of hitting spacebar. But the, you know, the weirdness of what's going on in that game, and the soundtrack, which is incredible.
Danny B.
Yeah.
Game Boy fame.
It's a nice, like, hey, I got 3 minutes to play, or I have an hour to play, and I want to yell at something inanimate. Cannibalt's a lot of fun, and it just translates well to that widescreen format really well. I also picked up World of Goo, which I just love the hell out of, except for the levels where it's like rotating, because that's stupid. Nobody builds on a rotating Earth. But yeah, World of Goo is a lot of fun. Also translates to tablet really well.
Yeah. It's actually one of the few that translated really well to the Wii. I actually I enjoyed it with the Wiimote. But I think tablet might be the best place for it, honestly.
Hey, I mean, all you gotta do is you remember your triangles.
Pythagorean theorem. Ethan,
and then,
hold on, Ethan, you played a kind of a similar game last week, this Sticky Linky?
Sticky Linky, yeah. It's almost like the it's like an opposite of World of Goo. When I first started playing it, I thought it was World of Goo. I was like, oh, this is a rip-off game. But actually, it's working to it's got the physics aspect of it, but you're trying to eliminate all these little things.
It's got like World of Goo meets like a Match 3 puzzle game, right?
Yeah, it's like World of Goo meets Columns or something like that. But I mean, it turned out to be really fun. But it reminded me of World of Goo because that was one of the. There's two games on the Wii that I enjoyed playing. Boom Blocks and World of Goo. And so, like, anytime anyone talks about World of Goo, I was like, oh, my Wii, I really miss that. And I'm like, well, no, I don't. I just miss World of Goo. So I have it on Steam, so it's okay.
The other tablet game I got into was War Games, which really dates us.
Yeah.
Jennifer Connelly, I think. Or
was Matthew Broderick?
It was Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
It wasn't Connelly. No way, right? Hold on. You keep going.
You IMDb that. Anyway, the game's kind of fun just because it's just a pattern matching. I think it's like a 6x6 grid, and there are four different colors, and then you get different upgrades and stuff. I paid no attention to the story, but it's kind of fun playing through a second time to get all the gold medals when you've got all the upgrades and sort of figure out the tricks. Ally Sheedy. There we go. That's who it is. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just sort of randomly found that. It got a high rating on Google Play Store, and I was like, never seen the movie, but, hey, I can learn the entire plot. No, haven't seen the movie.
Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa.
You would not like to play a game.
I'm assuming Google Play is just like Apple iStore.
It's like the App Store, except without all the douchey closed ecosystem thing.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel? Like, I know Josh always gives me a hard time for playing a tablet games, and I put a shit ton of time in that. I did too. Like, I was like. Like, you know,
if you don't play exclusively PC games, Josh Lee is gonna give you shit.
but I mean,
I don't want to defend him.
It feels good. It feels good to have like another really into it tablet guy. I mean, Justin plays, you know, tablet and phone games and stuff like that. But like I play them. Play them. Like I'm in, like I you know almost play them more than some.
I will
PC
say
games.
I can deal with. Josh being an exclusive PC gamer, I don't know how I'd handle if one of you was an exclusive tablet gamer.
I have standards.
They have their place, and those games are getting better with each year. I mean, honestly,
With the World of Goo was even linked. I cannot remember what the hell the service is, but it's essentially an achievement service.
Mm-hmm.
It's not truly that's real estate, but it's. I don't remember, but they've got their place. Waiting for a meeting, waiting for the doctor. Well, whatever.
What's the doctor doing? Oh wait,
I don't know what the hell the doctor's doing.
Oh, he's a dog.
On my tablet.
Well, I had to stop bringing it in to me when I took a dump because my legs would go numb eventually. You know what I mean? And so
I actually do know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so I'm just looking at my list of games, and it's sort of intimidating. Let's see. I got Choplifter HD because I saw that demo last year.
How about at
PAX? It's fine. There are some levels where the difficulty is so high. I'm just, even like going back with an upgraded chopper. I'm like, this is bullshit. You get far enough in the game, and it is hearkening back to the difficulty of the days when the original Choplifter came out.
I heard that. That's surprising. Yeah. I did not expect that. I mean, it's not a game I associate with challenge, I guess. I mean, other than from the classic sense of it just being an older game and all, you know, all games of that era were difficult, more for just that's how they had to design it. But I didn't expect Choplifter HD to pick up on that.
There are parts of the game where I'm just like, I was screaming at the TV and I had to play something else because I was disturbing the animals and my wife.
Now, is it difficult? Is it difficult because it's janky, like mechanics, or is it difficult it's actually difficult?
The mechanicals are great, but like there are points where like you've got 35 guys shooting heat-seeking RPGs at you, which let's not go to the whole technical problem with that, but. I'm sorry, third world country with stingers, like where everybody has stingers? No, they've got RPG 7s. which are not heat-seeking. Anyway, and the mortars are going off all around, and then there are apparently snipers with EMP guns, which make your craft go out of control, and there are flat cannons, and I'm probably forgetting something else. There are just points where you're completely surrounded, and it's like, I'm just going to restart this mission.
Yeah.
there's a lot of memorization that goes into it. Like, it's still pretty and fun, but on normal, the difficulty level is really high, and at times it's high enough where you just kind of get disheartened.
Mm-hmm. I don't like that.
On the other hand, there's a guy who's obviously that you can rescue in every level. He's like a bonus rescue, who's obviously a joke about Anderson Cooper, and he's pretty funny.
It's random as hell.
The in chopper conversation is hysterical. Like, on one mission, he's like, "Yeah, so you're late." And he's like, well, I just got out of the stockade," and the co-pilot's like, "What, you didn't know she was the general's daughter?" And he's like, "I didn't know the general had twins." yeah. There's pretty good stuff in there. Let's see. While we're on the topic of games that we saw demoed at PAX in 2011.
Topical.
I finally picked up Lord of the Rings War in the North.
Good call.
Which, yeah, it was a good call. That is a damn good game. I've beat it. I'm playing through it again.
I'm upset. We loved it at PAX, and I still managed to get to have my to have myself. I still managed to be talked out of giving it a try when it came out. It just got average reviews, but it's fucking fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of. It reminds me a little bit of Diablo 2, because I haven't played 3, but in a good way, in the sense that it's sort of dumbed down RPG.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are RPG elements, and in terms of your skill tree, you have to pay attention and figure out how you want to play, and it's totally linear. But on the other hand, it's total hack and slash. I enjoyed the hell out of it. It's a lot of fun. The story's interesting, but not really compelling. But I want more loot. I like killing orcs. I don't know. And yep. there's a noticeable difference between the three classes.
Yeah. The best part about it being a true hack and slash game is that it also embraces its M rating, because what always breaks the monotony for me in games like that is when it's really satisfying to kill dudes and you're decapitating and like hacking off limbs all the time, and in the Lord of the Rings universe it's strangely satisfying.
It's not only satisfying, it's great from the standpoint of they got that, and this is one of the few praises I have for Too Human. Mm-hmm. Which is one of those games where to put that in perspective, I was really excited for Too Human, mm-hmm. and it was just mediocre. Mm-hmm. But one of the coolest things in that game was when you got a chain going on of attacks and you're zipping all over the screen killing people, that was pretty cool. And Lord of the Rings, War in the North really captured that pretty well without, you know, you being a cybernetic demigod. you know, you can start chaining attacks together, and then at some point you're just hitting X for basic attack and Y for the critical hit and killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, normal attack, cut this dude's leg off. Come back, cut this guy's head off. Normal attack, stab him in the foot and then kick him in the face. I mean, it's pretty freaking cool.
That's the one that you and Josh played.
Yeah.
The eagle, I remember thinking back, is that giant eagle that you could call down to attack people, and that thing was so freaking awesome because you guys were fighting a troll or something like that, Justin, and suddenly, like, Josh is like, "Oh, we need to bring the eagle in," and after that, like, if they didn't make the eagle come and bite something or, you know, just toss a fucking troll off a cliff or whatnot, like, I was pissed. Like, I was like, you know, like, I feel like that game looked great, but I feel like I'd be too focused on my eagle friend coming in. And at one point, something punched the eagle, and we were all like, "What?" And the eagle just fucking, like, "What? I'm an eagle. Fuck you." And just ruined some shit.
The eagle's much more well-spoken than that.
He's like got like a very like, you know, like proper English accent. Like, I'm
fuck
going to
self.
Yeah.
No, like, like I said, Josh and I've played that co-op, and the co-op is a blast. It's local co-op's handled really well as far as how the menu systems work without ever interfering in your partner's game. And we have not played that game in a while, but we've resolved not to make any progress without one another. And it's been a while since I locked down a game and, you know, yeah, to your co-op buddy. And I'd anticipate seeing us stream that later this year because we still want to go through and beat that game. How far did you get, Gifford?
I beat it once on single player.
Cool.
I would be interested in playing multiplayer because I haven't. But yeah, it's good. And like Colin and the Eagle is like Colin and A-10. Like, oh, look, that guy's giant and he's probably going to step on me. Hang on. But why are you just standing there, mortal? Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
I was like, I want a big eagle. Like, I feel like when I'm walking out, like, in Berlin, you know, I feel so unsafe. And if I had a big eagle just flying over the top of me, like, don't worry about it, Ethan. You're okay. I'm always here. I'd feel so good. But I don't have
that. How American of you.
It
doesn't have to. I will say, I went to the zoo and they had a bald eagle and I was just like.
Did you salute it?
Yeah, I actually made the off-color comment. Oh, I didn't realize they were still holding prisoners from the war, but I was merely joking, just, and nobody understood what I said. So.
They
all understood what you said.
Bust out the national anthem at the top of your lungs.
I don't remember the last time I saw a bald eagle. And I mean, like, I'm a patriotic guy. I love my country, but I fucking love bald eagles. I love eagles and badass flying birds in general. I can see a falcon, like, I'll get a wreck, like, being like, badass falcon, hey, man. So yeah, I love fucking flying bird. Other birds suck. I fucking hate pigeons and parrots and cockatoos, but fucking eagles and falcons and hawks and anything like that. Peppers. Fuck yeah, man. Can't get enough of those things.
I had a gym teacher lost his eye from a red-tailed hawk that he trained. So you don't need a big bird to fuck somebody up.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he was a cool guy. So speaking of losing eyes, I also played some Lollipop Chainsaw.
Okay.
Which did a lot to sort of deal with my desire to, you know, have Buffy in a video game.
Okay. I didn't know where you were going with that, but
there was a Buffy the Vampire video game on Xbox, original. It's awful.
Yeah.
Don't play it.
Why don't you get that and go back and play that? Yeah.
Yeah. You'll hate it.
I was really, really excited for this because it looked kind of fun, and Suda 51, or was it Suda was involved, and Grasshopper Manufacturer was involved.
Yeah, that's his production company.
I was just really psyched for this because it looked funny and sort of an interesting graphic departure, having played Shadows of the Damned and, you know, Cheerleader with a Chainsaw. And it was really funny and entertaining, but damn, dude, if you're going to build a game that is basically set, the basic premise involves a whole lot of melee, yeah, you need to have your mechanics down. And that was the downer about that game. It wasn't
rewarding.
I wasn't going to go that far. I did enjoy my time with it, but
not from the gameplay side, I'm sure.
I didn't hate the gameplay side, but there was a definite degree of there are too many moves to master, and even if you do master them, they're kind of hit and miss. Mm-hmm. If you're going to make a melee game, dude, your controls got to be tight. And that was the downer.
I struggled with it from the aspect of I couldn't tell if the timing or, like you said, the mechanics were off, or if it was just designed that way that the chainsaw is a slower weapon than I want it to be. So I kind of gave it the benefit of the doubt most of the time, but just kind of looking back on it, like, you know, I actually thought you were going to say, you know, I played through it, but I would never play it again. And that's kind of where there's nothing drawing me back to it. All my highlights had to do with, the the main character's exchanges with the boyfriend. I just thought all the jokes around, like, just completely turning him into the objectification of her boyfriend is just so genius and so well done and so entertaining. That's the only – that's what I'm going to – that's what's going to stick with me about that game. Nothing about the gameplay or anything else really stands out.
I will say that the little cutscenes when you ran into a boss, they're reminiscent of Borderlands or Borderlands 2, actually.
Yeah, the way they intro them. Yeah.
Those were hysterical. Mm. But the game was funnier than it was fun to play. For a quick review, I'd give it a 3 of 5. Mm. Like, I don't hate my life for having played it, but I'm not going to. It's got no replay value.
Don't hate my life for having played it. Mad that I spent full price on it, but I would do it again just because I'm a sucker for hoping that Suda has another breakthrough, and I also will give him the benefit of the doubt after how much I enjoyed Shadows of the Damned. So yeah. That's kind of why I almost didn't care. But yeah, it's just a middling game when it comes down to it. But it also has a premise, and I think it has the characters where. It could have been much more enjoyable too. Just tighten up, give it some memorable gameplay. Give me some. I always say this, especially with brawlers that, and Lord of the Rings: War in the North did it well on the hack and slash side. Give me some satisfaction when I'm killing dudes. Like give me some highs, and it never really does that because it has those cutscenes where you chop, you know. Three zombies' heads off in a row, and
that fucks up the flow of your combat.
Yeah, it's not satisfying. It's not like in even like the, you know, the mini games to you know, saw through the bosses. Those weren't satisfying.
No.
Everything that was satisfying, you weren't actually participating in. It would be just like a cutscene that you kill a guy in a gruesome way, and it's funny. But
you almost felt it was weightless.
Yeah. Mm. You just need that hook. You need that. You know, the kind of like satisfactions that come with fatalities, like to keep pushing me forward. I realize that a brawler is going to be repetitive, but it just never added anything of interest. And you just kind of it just became a grind.
Sorry, that pretty much summed it up. Another game where I get chop a lot of people up was downloadable. It was Dust and Elysian Tale, which was just huge amounts of fun. I really didn't finish it because something else. I think Borderlands 2 came out or something like that.
Keeps happening.
But that's a beautiful game. Mm-hmm. It's kind of fun. This story was a little odd, and I kind of felt immature. Sounds like too much of a criticism. Mm-hmm. But at some point during the story, I'm kind of like, okay, yeah, it's a fairy tale. There's some allegory going on here. I no longer care.
In that respect, I don't know who the target audience for that game is. You know, because I feel
people on the internet suspect what the target audience of that.
No,
game is.
I mean it's not.
No,
okay,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Furry jokes aside, that's not the target audience either. But it's like and some aspects of the appeal of its gameplay, I feel that it skews older.
Yeah.
But in its content, it skews a bit younger, and I feel like the crossover there is a lot more limited than it needed to be.
Yeah, but at the same time, they really nailed the sort of unique combat style. I thought that was really impressive.
I like the air juggling in that game.
Yeah, absolutely. And on top of that, it was just very, maybe it was sort of the opposite of Lollipop Chainsaw. To the extent that, like, the combat in that game is satisfying, it levels up well, it's incredibly smooth. But the story, I'm kind of going, I don't give a crap. Like, yeah. This is kind of a stupid story. You're all one-dimensional characters.
Just never grabbed you.
No, it has its moments, but they're kind of few and far between.
That begs a question. I mean, so in a situation where you've got a choice between
content that is compelling or entertaining and action that is compelling, but maybe flat or shallow in terms of story? I mean, what would you prefer, the dust, or would you prefer the zombie fucking, you know, lollipop chainsaw game? I mean, that's what, like, I ask myself that sometimes too, is I played some games that have great action. Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning is one of them where the action's great, but I just like got to a point where it's like, yeah, okay. Like, I'm done at this point, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
I'm more accepting of some gameplay in some other games that isn't as great because maybe there's a lot going on. I think Fallout New Vegas is one of those. It was deep, and there was a lot of different things going on. The combat didn't feel great. Like, I didn't like fighting things necessarily, but it was acceptable at that point. So I want – and I see these kind of like these kind of games coming out. I'm always wondering how everybody else feels about that because to me I'd rather get into a story and be kind of drawn into a story than I would a game that's just really awesome gameplay but completely shallow.
Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of think that I would answer that with Castlevania Symphony of the Night. It's a great balance. Mm-hmm. I think, to be fair, I have not played the Uncharted series, so I have no basis of comparison, but I think Mass Effect is pretty good at balancing those two things.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just mentioning those two, and I realized that Symphony of the Night came out as a big console release years ago, but I played it for the first time on the Xbox, so I'm just presenting those as two sort of levels. Of one is like AAA, like if this would be a July 4th release for a movie. And Symphony of the Night, not so much. But regardless, I think there is a sweet spot for both of them, for both these AAAs and these smaller ones. I don't know. I guess when it comes down to it, I would prefer a solid gaming experience. Like, if you ask me to compare Lollipop Chainsaw and Legion Tale, I'm going to pick Legion Tale. Like, okay. The gaming experience is better. It doesn't mean I don't want a great story experience, but unless you've made it clear that this is a story game where it's more about the story than it is the game, which clearly Lollipop Chainsaw, that's not the deal. This is supposed to be fun to play.
I think the best example I can relate back to our fight on the Aftermath episode from A Horrible Show last week. Because Josh Lee finally played The Walking Dead, and I'd say Telltale's games are a good example of why I have, I would say on average I have a longer tolerance for when gameplay excels and the story lacks. But what The Walking Dead manages to do for me is we can't really argue that the gameplay is all that engaging, but it has the highs when I need it. It has satisfying, like, gory fatalities or satisfying tense moments that entertain me enough to keep pressing forward because I'm so drawn into the story.
Yeah, so, like, that's fair.
Like, even if you have your focus on gameplay, you have your focus on story, you still have to give me highs on the other side to keep me going. Because Ethan, what game were you relating it to? Reckoning. Same thing. Like, that combat is like infinitely entertaining and interesting, but because after 15 hours that I was so disengaged with the world, I completed a storyline or a quest series that I just didn't want to start another one, and I became completely disinterested in the game. Mm-hmm. And because it just, I don't need much, but I do need highs. You can be just completely boring and dismissible and I could ignore you, but you have to have a high every now and then just to keep me going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't even know what happened in that game. But yeah, I mean, it is that balance, but it seems like there are those games that struggle with that. And I don't know. I don't know what, you know, if you have the resources and you're like, okay, you make a choice right now. Awesome story, unbelievable gameplay. Like, I always wonder, you know, how those decisions are made at that point.
Well, I mean, think about like the God of War series. Clearly not really a story-driven game. That is all about the action. But when they have a cutscene, there's a purpose for the cutscene, and the cutscene means something for the rest of the game. It doesn't take up a lot of your time, and it's normally like, holy shit, like, oh my god, Zeus has decided to come down from Olympus and kick my ass. Like, you know, if you want to be an action-driven game with really tight controls, awesome. But your story, when you decide to interfere with the great action with your story, do it. You don't hear me giving a lot of props to Modern Warfare, but I think it was it in 2 when they set off the nuke in Mexico?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Yes, it was.
Okay. I don't. Maybe it's not Mexico. Maybe it's in Russia. I can't remember. But
yeah, they set it off in space.
No, it's not in space. But anyway,
yeah, it was. Yeah, they set off a nuke, and it was an EMP blast after that.
The one where the helicopter goes down, and the guy's like crawling. There's an entire level where like you're just crawling out of a burning helicopter, and then you die. Like, that is not a story-driven game. But as far as a story level goes, that's a badass. Yeah. Like, that was one of those, like, whoa.
The way I'm picturing it, that's why Modern Warfare 1 was memorable, was because I had the gameplay carrying me through the entire campaign, then all of a sudden it ends with a really dramatic, memorable moment that made the story kind of stand out, and The thing was, kind of like, then they made the mistake of trying to build out a story from there, and that's where we all kind of had issues with it. And I kind of relate the same thing to, you brought up God of War, but, you know, it had enough, like, kind of story beats to keep me interested, but it was the gameplay driving me through. And then by the time God of War 3 rolled around, they tried to do a lot more with Kratos' character, and I ripped it apart as far as, like, I do not care. Like... And by three games, your gameplay is also worn out on me. So why the fuck am I playing this game other than I just want to see the trilogy through because I've invested this much time into it? So
yeah, no, that's completely fair. I just mean, I guess I was thinking more in terms of God of War 1 and 2.
Yeah,
Where that they did a great balance with it.
Jaffe knew what he was doing on 1. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Man, I played a lot of games. I'm not really going to go through all of them because some of them aren't really worth mentioning. I played some Mass Effect 3. And, I mean, I played it through twice. All the way. And I played a lot of multiplayer because multiplayer is surprisingly good and polished. And, man, they are doing an awesome job of support for that.
Yeah, they are. They are.
I mean, like, a surprisingly good support system with weekend challenges and stuff.
I mean, I could care less about the multiplayer, but I know a lot of people that are invested in it, and they keep giving them more, and it's okay. Nice. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
What a weird thing to get right in retrospect, actually.
Yeah.
Fucked up the end of the game, but we nailed the multiplayer.
Yeah.
So then there's this little game called Borderlands 2.
Huh?
And I love it. Sometimes I get irritated when people start talking and expositing the story because I don't care. I just want you to give me my next mission so I can go kill more guys and get better guns. Mm-hmm. Actually, I just want another gun like my infinite bullet gun that I got towards the beginning of the game. Yeah, infinite bullets.
It's funny how the beginning of the game is shaped so much by which guns you get, because I haven't got a gun that I've been truly excited about, and I've just been waiting for it, but sometimes...
Yeah, me neither.
But I also know that's random, because first Borderlands, I got some kick-ass weaponry, so...
Unfortunately, I have not gotten a kick-ass sniper rifle. It was a pistol that did 51 damage, and I was like... Well, I'm going to put this in my safe because I'm going to give this to my next character because it's like, yeah.
Like, pay it forward.
Something. I'm playing as Zero the Sniper because that's where I tend to go with my video game characters. I like snipers. I like nobody noticing me and then their brains exploding out of the front of their head. That game is just a lot of fun. I mean, like I said, I give two shits about the story. But Handsome Jack is
funny.
He's funny. He's a really bad guy, so I'm not going to feel bad about killing him. We already have our first DLC. Yeah. Well, actually, it's like the third DLC, because there was some early DLC, and now there's a new character and the first round of DLC, and I'm like, dude, I'm not even done with the game.
I know.
I've been playing a lot. It's just a lot of fun, and you know I've heard it on 1UP and Joystick and Giant Bomb, and I agree with all three of them. This is Borderlands more.
Borderlands.
It's not Borderlands 2. It's Borderlands more, and I have no problem with that.
Yeah,
I didn't need anything else. It was like Batman Arkham City. Arkham Asylum more.
I'm also glad they didn't try to be anything else, honestly. Yeah.
That's what I was worried about. Because, I mean, the game, I think there's those games that can get away with that, just like, hey, this is just a bunch of crazy shit's going to happen. And you're going to be okay with it. If you're not okay with it, this isn't the game for you. You know, it's always funny to see people, you know, I read a couple of reviews with Borderlands 2, and people were like, oh, well, you know, the story, like, you're an idiot. Like, that's dumb. That's just, you're dumb. That's being dumb. Like, you play the game, you shoot shit, you fucking go balls to the wall in terms of, you know, how you shoot shit, and you have fun with it. I mean, I almost want to slap people in those situations. You know, like, you don't have to be a fucking literary critic when you play Borderlands 2. You know, it's embarrassing.
Well, on top of you don't have to be a literary critic, like, I'm not entirely sure what's going on. And if the entire story is a rehash of the first one where, spoiler alert, if you haven't played the first one, Angel is going to backstab you again. And I'm not going to go with that spoiler alert. But even if that happens again, I don't care.
Okay.
I got to get a whole lot of guns with a whole lot of explosives and blow a lot of stuff up. And the whole business with the badass rank is awesome. Just great. Like, you can add, like, you know, 5% to a certain attribute doesn't sound like a lot, but when your hand grenade does, like, 2,500 damage, 5% is a good chunk.
It's also a brilliant addition to kind of Gifford, one of our favorite features of that has been, like, embraced this generation of the new game plus. Like,
yeah.
That it carries over to those other characters is fucking awesome. Like, yeah, I realize I'm starting a new character, but I've also put 40 hours into this game. Like, let me kind of reap some rewards here. And it's just subtle enough, and also gives you some control that it feels a little bit customized. You know, you could get rid of achievements if you have a badass system in a game. I'll take that. So
yeah.
It's just cool. I mean, all I have to say to Gearbox on this one is, well done. You didn't screw anything up. You made some tweaks from the last one, and although you're not doing the annual release business, man, you guys had a formula that worked. You stuck to it. You made the stuff that worked better, and the stuff that drove me crazy in the last one, you either improved upon it so it doesn't drive me crazy anymore, or you got rid of it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Nailed it.
All right, moving on to the games that I've been playing, because I know you guys care. That's why we're here. Ethan, I've been actually waiting to talk to you about this. I know you were kind of heavy into Darksiders 2 there for a while. And so I wrapped up Darksiders 2 about 3 weeks ago. And basically started off really high with the game. I'm going to keep – apparently I like video game highs this week. And then I kind of just tailed off with it. I just kind of lost my interest, and it was a grind to finish the game. I will say that the last dungeon and a half are pretty fantastic. It's the best dungeon design, and I thought the ending was satisfying. I enjoyed the story. Some Darksiders 1 fans may not agree with me there, but overall, I was pretty disappointed in the game.
Wow.
I'm working on a piece for the site. Just obviously this has been on my mind a lot. The fact is, this game is just good throughout. It doesn't have any flaws that I can, like, really hang my hat on, but it also just doesn't have any climaxes that See how I switched it up there? Didn't have any climaxes that I can get excited about either. It just,
yeah.
It was, it was, what was really surprising was I went on a lot before the game came out and right after it came out, like how much I love the character of Death. And I'm still a fantastic character, but by the end of it, I didn't so much care about him, and I enjoyed War's Adventure much more. And I didn't expect to kind of have that about face with the game. And I am really anxious for somebody else on our site to finish it so we can talk through it. But I was pretty overall just disappointed. It wasn't the leap forward that the franchise needed. And it's certainly a fine game, but not what it needed to be, or not what I expected.
You know, I'm very interested to play this, having heard you say that. Mm-hmm. Just because I got stuck in Darksiders 1 about midway, where I thought it slowed down,
mm-hmm.
and I think I'm not just the minority, I think I'm the only surviving member of my species in terms of our site on our reaction to Darksiders 1, although I loved the character War.
Mm-hmm.
That was never an issue. So I'm really interested to play Darksiders 2 and see where our reactions are.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I gave up Darksiders 1, I think we've determined between half and two-thirds of the way through.
Mm.
So I would like to force myself, if I have to. But, you know, I would like to play Darksiders 2 just to see where our opinions diverge or converge on the second one versus the first one.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I don't know if this is telling of the game. I don't ever think this is telling of any game with me because I get distracted so easily and switch between so many games. But I was really into it, and mm-hmm. then I wasn't as much. And there was a lot of games came out, Torchlight 2, Borderlands 2, XCOM. I mean, a shit ton of games came out. And I was kind of okay with setting Darksiders 2 aside. That being said, I don't know if maybe I'm going to hit that or not. Like, I kind of have a fear that I'm going to hit that point that you did, Justin. Now, the first game, Gifford, what you were talking about, I did get to that point, but I pushed through it. And I think Lacey, you and I had talked about that as well. But with two, like, I don't know. Like, I want it not to be like that. And I think that I just have to be in a better state of mind to play the game and to finish it up. But I don't know when that's going to be. And again, I don't know if that is just an indirect way of me saying that game didn't hold up to what, you know, Darksiders did. Because Darksiders, I was pretty, despite, you know, the slowdown, I was compelled and I kept playing it. And this one, you know, the loot system's great. That is definitely an improvement because it kind of makes me want to, you know, stick to trying to find shit. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I guess there wasn't enough to keep me into it. Still think it was a good game. I haven't been disappointed, but again, I haven't been compelled to keep going.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't disappointed other than it just – this. Maybe it's just me being a fanboy that this series has so much potential. And I really – even from the THQ standpoint, I want them to have their title that just takes them to another level and gets them back to where they're competing with – EA and Activision and Ubisoft and on that level, because I think we need another company like that. And I wanted Darksiders to also do that. But I think as you guys were talking, what was starting to go through my head was there's no tension in this story. Maybe it's because I think the Death is such a badass. Mm-hmm. But I never, like, you never feel like he's in danger. You never feel like, you know, I just know I'm going to grind through this. There's no, maybe there's just no emotional tie to the story because of that. Because I said, I just didn't have anything that made me, I didn't have my hell yeah moments. I didn't have my, I'm a badass. I was just taking care of business for 20 plus hours and just, you know, and then by the end of it, man, yeah, I felt like really what Death went through was, you know, he just had to do a lot of bullshit chores for people to go help out his brother. And like, why did you people put me through this? And now, you know, I achieved my goal. But man, that was a big journey to get there. It just wasn't very, you know, Death didn't grow as a character for it. It was more of like he was checking off a shopping list.
Well, he is Death, to be
fair. Yeah.
Yeah, that's thinking about it in retrospect, definitely, I think there was a way, like, I almost had to take myself out of the fetch quest stuff, because for a while I was like, this is kind of, it's kind of dumb.
I always got a kick out of, like, people giving death orders.
Yeah. And it does, and it is, because, and I think there is kind of a, and if I have any sort of, criticism for the game, it's definitely you. It's really kind of a strange sense of who you are as death, because death is death. Death is invincible. Death could. I mean, war. Okay, I kind of get it, but death is just something, and like no one is really all that afraid of him. Mm-hmm. Like he's like, it's you. Like, what are you doing? Like, oh, you're back. Like, what's going on? And so it's just kind of strange. And I think that's where some of the, I don't know, like where are we at in the story? This is happening before. And I don't know.
And they use this game to like really expand the Darksiders universe. They showed a lot more, like you go into a lot of different realms in this one. Yeah. And what I really enjoyed about Darksiders 1 was that it all took place on Earth post-apocalypse. And granted, like, not everything looked like it belonged on Earth, because there's still a lot of, like, demons, and the landscapes have changed, and it's hundreds and hundreds of years later. But I kind of missed that tie. But once I put that out of my head, Darksiders 2 still, it had a very weird feeling. Like, the Forge Lands, where you start, I don't know, it just gave me a lot of, like, Braveheart music flashbacks, and it just, I don't know, it just, yes, the music and the kind of the atmosphere fit with the realm that you're in, but didn't necessarily fit with Death's adventure. This is a redemption game. You're out to avenge your brother, and sometimes it's just like it has this very just like exploratory, like I said, kind of Braveheart.
There's a soundtrack. Kind of aspect of meandering that kind of goes along with it being such like a big deal. There's like, no, you gotta get all this stuff going.
There's no tension. There's no urgency. Mm-hmm. It's an exploration game, and yet it doesn't really fit the character. And I think it bugged me.
I'm not sure how well Death lends himself as a character needing urgency, because he's Death. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, considering people talk about the heat death of the universe, I would think that, and since we know angels and demons can die, I would think that people would be a little bit more, I'm trying not to poop myself, when talking to the angel of death, who, provided it's possible to kill God, would be the responsible for the, he would be the guy responsible for showing up to take a deity's head, hearing about this, I mean, part of me sympathizes with the story writers, like, you're having Death as the main character. But on the other hand, I'm kind of intrigued by this, hearing both of your critiques from the standpoint of, I got stuck in the first Darksiders because it sort of slowed down. It wasn't because war wasn't compelling. It wasn't because the story wasn't good. It slowed down. I'm kind of curious to see whether, there's nothing super compelling to keep going, but the game is going to keep me entertained for the whole time. I don't know. Again, it's just one of those, hearing you guys talk about it, it sounds like some of the downers might be benefits for me. And I don't give up on games real easily.
I mean, I'm glad I saw it through. The thing is, I can't take any shots at it gameplay-wise. The only thing I could say is, sure, it has a lot of, Darksiders is known for borrowing gameplay mechanics and repurposing them well. And Darksiders 2 certainly does that, but some of them, just kind of wondering, like, if they're absolutely necessary. I mean, you can even go to the loot system. It's done well enough. It's a nice change of pace from Darksiders 1, but by the end of the game, I didn't really care about it. And
what about the gameplay mechanics? The borrowed ones? I mean, I know what they were
It hit a lot of the same notes as the first one. Has some twists on a lot of them. I will say it doesn't feel as Zelda formulaic as the first one. Like, it does a really good job with you're in a dungeon, but you don't really know you're in a dungeon. Like, it's very seamless in that regard, and it doesn't have the you have to literally use the last thing you picked up to solve this dungeon. It balances that a lot better. But at the same time, I think that added to a little bit of the monotony, or like the game just felt really, really long after a while. And like I said, I had a lot. There's a lot of menial tasks in the middle that don't have true consequences that I think weighed on me. I just wanted to get the game done. I didn't want to give up on it, but I just wanted it to kind of end.
Became a chore at the end there.
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, like I said, the last dungeon kind of brought everything together. But that middle third will make or break it for a lot of people. So.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I finished it because that had the danger of being pushed off with all the games coming out.
If it drops to like $40, you're saying total purchase?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, even at full price, you're going to get your money's worth. I mean, compared to a lot of the games nowadays, I mean, definitely, like, I think, again, if it wasn't for all the games coming out, holy cow, like, I would have been stuck to that game, definitely. But there's a hell of a lot to it. I think in terms of, like, how the class system works, more or less, you have some, you know, replay value there. The DLC that's coming out doesn't interest me all that much, but I mean, it looks like something that if someone really wants to be a completionist and jump in there, do that. I mean, there's a lot to do in the game,
and it's a quality production, like I said. Mm-hmm. Voice acting, I mean, everything's brought together well, like and everything is above average. It's just like everything's an 8 in this game. Yeah. Just nothing's a 10 and nothing. Mm-hmm. but nothing's a 5 either, so mm-hmm. It's just you know, if you're happy going to the dance with an 8, that's fine. Sometimes, though.
Hey, you know what? As long as the 8 puts out.
Well, it does.
Yeah. As far as brand new releases, I spent a lot of my weekend playing Dishonored. And I was really... I was trying to reserve my excitement about this game because I felt like... with a new franchise coming out, I could get burned. Dishonored has come together just like I imagined as far as the hype that it was getting around E3 this year. I was like, I don't know why it went through my head, but I saw it and I was like, this might be this year's BioShock. And that's kind of how I feel as far as it has a really great sense of itself. The universe is really interesting. The style of the characters and the world, you know, it's got this like, steampunk kind of vibe to it, but also kind of based in history, and the characters grabbed me immediately. And now the story has been that, you know, you can play Dishonored as you know, as a stealth game or as an action game, and I don't think it's ever been intended to play it through as a full action game. And because of how much I got brought into the world itself, I only want to play it as a stealth game, and that's a big leap for me. Like I know Gifford, you really liked Deus Ex Human Revolution, and I gave that a decent shot, but I still for whatever reason I couldn't push through, even though I wanted to try to play that as a stealth game. But a lot of the hurdles that I run into with stealth games just don't seem to be apparent in Dishonored, and I am just completely engrossed in this adventure. And if it wasn't for XCOM coming out in the same week, I would have been wrapped up entirely in it. But I've finished I believe there are like kind of 6 major sections to the game. I've completed the first one in not a complete stealth run, but enough that I was satisfied with it. Like, I'm still okay killing dudes if they see me, or at the last minute, or if it comes down to it. But if I get like, you know, spotted and the entire, like all the guards come after me, I tend to reset it and try to get a new strategy so I can, get through it a lot more, without killing people. I like to sneak up behind dudes and knock them out rather than have to kill them. But I'm not opposed to killing a few guys either.
You know, this is as much as I want to play XCOM, I feel like XCOM's it's got some staying power.
Yeah.
Not worried about it. Like, I'm going to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. this is the game, and I am loving the hell out of my Borderlands 2, but this is the game where I'm going, come on, let me finish this game so I can go play it.
I think, though, they complement each other well. That's the tricky part with I don't know if I can balance this with XCOM, because they're both a little more thoughtful, especially the way I'm approaching Dishonored. But I could go back to just shooting dudes in Borderlands and then taking a break and playing Dishonored. So you may, if you can balance two games, these are different enough if you choose to play it the stealth way. Now, the other thing, though, playing Dishonored as an action game is also really satisfying and entertaining, because they when you get spotted, you're not defenseless. And I think that's where a lot of stealth games also break down. And I'm glad that they've built this world where it's your choice. And it really does feel like your choice. If you want to sprint through this game and just go at every dude with your crossbow and your sword, you can do that. I feel like the world rewards me personally as a player if I stick the stealth. But it's also fun to chop dudes' heads off and stab them through the neck and scare the hell out of their bros, because you're one of the first abilities you pick up. It's got some magic stuff in it. It's just the ability to blink, which is just teleport, and just, you know, people freaking out that you're using magic, and it's really satisfying. And the other thing I didn't hear mentioned too much before the game, each section kind of has an assassination target. It feels a little bit broader than the assassination targets in Assassin's Creed, but, you know, there's a very direct way that you could go up and kill them. But every section has a lot of optional side quests, and those side quests will lead you to find out other ways to basically screw this assassination target over in a kind of a gruesome fashion, but you won't technically kill him. And, It's really satisfying when you can see how you would miss all that stuff, but if you pull off the side quest and just like fuck this guy over rather mm-hmm. than, you know, just kill him sneakily and no one knows you're in there, there's something more satisfying about this guy's still alive and he knows you fucked him over and he can't do anything about it. And
so what did you like slide like naughty pictures into his like, you know, work folder, you know, like, oh, he's looking at porn while he's supposed to be working, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Steal a cell phone and send text messages to his ex-girlfriends, that kind of thing. I couldn't recommend this game more. And I'm also glad that Bethesda has another franchise under their belt. That's a lot different than, some other games. I'm really curious to see how this affects my interest in Assassin's Creed, not because they're similar games, but just from the stealth assassination side of this, that I may be getting some of my satisfaction out of the way. And also it's a change of pace, because Assassin's Creed 3 looks amazing, but I'm sure it will still have a lot of that formula. And maybe that's why I'm getting so much pleasure out of Dishonored, is because it feels completely fresh. And you can't say that a lot about releases these days.
Yeah. Cool.
Beyond that, we played some Retro City Rampage on our live stream last week. I've been waiting for this game. I mean, everybody's been waiting for this game for,
oh yeah,
like 15 years, as somebody said.
I was gonna say
no, but a lot. I mean, I played this again back at our PAX 2011, I kind of compare this to, I talked a little bit about Hell Yeah, Wrath of the Dead Rabbit, and that these are very entertaining games, but I can't decide if they're fun to play. Granted, Retro City Rampage has like the old school Grand Theft Auto gameplay to fall back on. So just when I'm bored, it's still satisfying to get in my car and just drive up and down the sidewalk and run over a ton of people and then get chased by the cops until the military shows up. It still has that side to it. This game, I knew it was going to be referential. I knew it was going to have a lot of, satisfying references to old school games and the movies I grew up with. But it is so rapid fire with these references that it's really catching me off guard. It's just so thick with references that I am just amazed by it. And it is, I have not stopped smiling while playing that game.
You know,
yeah.
I don't think that I'm like, it's not like our tastes are massively divergent. Like, you guys are a couple of NBA 2K13 fans.
Not to single anyone out.
and all I do is play, I don't know, Risk. But I could not... I don't give a crap about this game. I don't get it. Like, I don't get why you guys are excited about it. I'm not trying to hate on the game.
Did you play it?
Yeah, I played it, and I watched you guys play it, and just like, it's not a game I miss.
I'm sorry. Anytime you cross over Bill and Ted references into a Back to the Future reference, and then all of a sudden Solid Snake shows up, you've got my money. Like, like, where do I sign up?
I like that too. I don't want in a game that looks like I could have played it on my Commodore 64.
Okay, I'm gonna let Gifford bring me down a bit. Ethan, where are you going?
I was gonna say I think that it was worth the money. It definitely was. But again, like with some games, like I just don't know if it has that hook. Sure. You know, that maybe that's the theme of the night is like, you know, the games minus the hooks. I mean, I'm not, you know, I played it for a while. I got like, this is cool. And I think it'll be a game that I'll pick up because it's a very easy game to pick up and play for a little bit. It's segmented well. Yeah.
Short doses.
And I think that there it's definitely a success. I'm not in the frame of mind to play it right now, which is kind of disappointing because I've been anticipating it for so long, you know, and that's like the worst thing, you know, with a game is that, you know, you're like, oh, this will be great. I won't ever stop playing it. And then you kind of stop playing it. Now granted, again, I bought the game, the XCOM came out the next day. And so I'm definitely going to give it another shot. But, right now the references are impressive. The gameplay is not super fun or anything like that. But I mean, there's some, I've got a lot of chuckles, and it was tough to. I'm good with like 80s and early gaming, you know, knowledge, but it was hitting me so fast that I missed a lot of it. Like at one point, I replayed the game again. The A team shows up.
Yep.
I mean, the freaking A team shows up, and I missed that because Bill and Lance from Contra popped out of a helicopter.
Well,
at one
right
point
before
well.
The A team, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were attacking.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, you guys have valid points. Like, like I said, I haven't decided if it's fun to play. It is entertaining enough in short doses that I'm completely, completely fine with it. But I also wonder, along with Hell Yeah and some of these other downloadable titles, how critical do I actually get for a $10 to $15 purchase?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I can't get overly critical with it. But I will admit that I am really partial to this game and to the developer's devotion to it for the care that he took with this game, with the references and with building out the world. You can literally feel his blood in these pixels, and so I give him a lot of credit, and I'm happy to support the game. I don't know if it's going to have any long-term draw, but as a, like I said, as a game that you play in short bursts, which I'm always a fan of building those up in my library. This is a go-to game for when I'm trying to choose what big game I want to play next. And especially for its mission structure lends itself well to that. It's got mini games throughout the world. So I don't really have any major detractions from the game. I'm not going to say it's perfect by any means, but you know, it's more on that 4 out of 5 scale. And I think, it knows who its audience is. The audience knows if they'll love it or not, and I couldn't recommend it more for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely the difference between love and like at that point. Yeah. You know, I'll date you for a week, you know what I mean? I mean, did those guys do anything else while this game was being developed? Like, that's what I was always curious about. It took so long.
I don't know. I mean, it's basically one dude, so...
Oh, it was one dude. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So, and then I'm sure it went through some weird licensing things because originally it was just going to be a WiiWare release, and then it was seeming like it was going to be an XBLA exclusive for a bit, and then all of a sudden it got tied into a Vita / PSN release at the same time, and then luckily it came out on the PC, so that's where I grabbed it. But
yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I don't want to play it at all. It's just I'm not that excited about it. Like, sure. I love all of the.
It came out at a shitty time too. I gotta say that.
All the references you guys are talking about, or that you're telling us about, like I get them all, and I love that kind of stuff. You know, there's a portion in the Dresden Files in one of the books where he's fighting this critter that, adapts to people's fears, and he starts busting out lines from like 80s action movies, like "Get away from her, you bitch." And it's hysterical. Like, I have dog ears all over the book. I think it's great. But just from both playing and seeing the gameplay, I'm kind of like,
I don't know.
It doesn't do it for me.
It's not like I'm going to convince anybody here, but like I said, I think the audience knows who it is, and they've probably already played it, so they probably skipped over this section. So, I do want to give a quick shout out to my 3DS lineup as far as the three games that stood out since I picked that up a couple weeks ago. I haven't got to talk about that on this show. Pushmo deserves all the critical praise that it has gotten over the past year, and I'm excited for its sequel to be released later this year, Crashmo. But that is a very brilliant puzzle game and uses the 3D visuals very well, and also I like the little sumo character that you are pushing around all these blocks, so couldn't recommend that one more. I am surprised. I've been very genuinely surprised by Super Mario 3D Land. It is a system seller. Like, everybody kind of knocked it down a little bit as an above average Mario game, but weren't willing to put that system seller tag on it. Like, it just something was holding it back from greatness. Granted, I'm not too far into the game, but I don't know what's holding it back. It may be that I haven't played a Mario game, a true Mario game, really since Super Mario Galaxy, but this is a unique Mario game. Like, it fits. If there is a land in between the kind of open action games that Mario Galaxy and Mario 64 have established and the 2D Mario games, Mario 3D somehow fits in there, because the 3D worlds they're really concise, almost like puzzle-like type of levels. But it does a lot of interesting things with the 3D perspective and the camera angles, especially the verticality element of getting really high in a level and having to jump down and almost a kind of parachute. That it does some really cool things that I did not expect to even care about the 3D aspect of my 3DS, and this game pulls it off really well. And again, Nintendo establishes how you can design around 3D really well, and the selling point of their system. So that game has kind of floored me a bit, and I know it only gets better the further I get. It's supposed to basically easy mode for the intro, and then a bunch of hard levels for the hardcore fans later in the game. So I can't wait to get to those. And then lastly, on the eShop, my star has been Mutant Muds. I think that's available for PC as well, but it's a 2D action platformer. More platforming, but a little bit of shooting, but does some really, again, neat things with you jump into the background and you jump into the foreground in the 3D camera. I'm a sucker for 2D games that have 3D backgrounds. and this
are we talking like Mario 3?
Yeah. Yeah, but done with a 3D camera and designed around it, like every level uses it, and it's pretty cool. So
I'm feeling a little nauseous right now. It sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, and I like where the eShop's going. Downloadable games on 3DS. There needs to be a lot more of them, and been pretty happy with the timing of my purchase. Found it for $20 bucks off, and the 3DS XL is a great piece of hardware. So, I do want to wrap this up with Double Dragon Neon. So, I think a couple weeks ago, Josh and I live streamed almost the entirety of Double Dragon Neon. I'll say almost the entirety, because we got to the final boss and we died, and then it made us restart the mission from the beginning, and we said "fuck you."
But you have to fight each other for the girl.
I'm assuming that has. I mean, it sticks pretty close to the double dragon formula in that regard. That I would be shocked if you didn't have to fight each other for the girl. So this game is better than I expected. I'm not sure if that means it's good, but it got absolutely torn to shreds review wise. But it's much more Double Dragon than I give it credit for, than a lot of people gave it credit for. And it definitely just wears that kind of 80s style on its sleeve. And unfortunately, it's on both sleeves all the time. And I think it's actually like an 80s suit. And it just goes a little bit over the top to the point where it gets annoying rather than charming. And that's where it just kind of breaks down a bit. It has some great moments in it. I love the bad guy that basically reminds me of the voice of Skeletor. Like I think it's like Skullpocalypse or something like that. And then, I mean, just the fact that there's a mechanic where you can give each other health by giving each other a high five, and also the guys can miss their high five, and they're kind of doofuses in that regard. And it's a brawler. Do not play this game solo, but play it with a buddy. Play it local co-op, and you'll have a lot of fun. We did.
Yeah, I was gonna say yeah. It's I love Double Dragon growing up, and I will sometimes say, oh, you know, well, I mean, yeah, essentially that's why. But the brawler as we know it, as we knew it, I think that is a genre. Even though, like, I sometimes refuse to admit this, it doesn't really have a place anymore. I think.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Like, it just it's tough to be too compelled to play through a game like that over and over again, because the same kind of shit happens. It's awesome, but hopefully nobody expected anything different than that from I don't know.
That's the thing, is I think the people upset at it think that brawlers still hold up, and they don't. They designed
Castle Crashers.
Well, yeah.
But
I do not disagree with you. I'm just saying
Castle Crashers is as good as it gets. And they but in that regard, you can't make a Double Dragon Castle Crasher. They made a Double Dragon game.
Yeah,
and
I just looked at the images. I had not seen them before, and I will not be downloading that game.
I was kind of disappointed with Way Forward at the game that they didn't just go 2D sprites and they went the kind of more polygonal stylized graphics there. But it's a Double Dragon game. And. And I think people taking a shot at it for not being a Double Dragon game, I think they're confusing what a Double Dragon game was.
Yeah.
And it's now, like I said, I don't know if that means it's a good game. It isn't. I wouldn't have played it if I didn't have a local co-op buddy like Josh that I knew that would laugh at it along with me, and we made it fun. So, that was a fun way to spend a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a couch co-op game. There's nothing around it.
Yep. I think that's going to do it for our games discussion tonight. Moving on to HorribleNight.com updates. Like I said, the last couple of weeks, we are planning our charity marathon for November 17th coming up. You'll be able to see some announcements on the site, how you can get involved. Donations will be going once again to Child's Play. We'll be doing a 24-hour gaming marathon, streaming it all live on Twitch.tv/HorribleNight, and coming up with ways where you can get involved in the stream and affect what we're doing, and hopefully keep you entertained at the same time. But if we don't entertain you, it's Ethan's fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then some other things going on behind the scenes. We are very close to a redesign of HorribleNight.com. One of the weaknesses of our current design is it's not very mobile device friendly, and we're looking to kind of correct that and give the site a little bit of a fresh update here coming soon. So when things start to change, don't freak out. And if you have any ideas for us, I'm definitely taking them. So hit us up on our contact form for what things aren't working well for you, and maybe we can address those. But that should be rolling out here by early November before the charity marathon. So HorribleNight.com might look a little bit different by the time you listen to this. Who knows?
Yep.
And to wrap up the show, as we always do with our threesomes, our off-topic discussion, see what the hell we've been doing besides games. And Gifford, it's been a bit.
I can't even cover the books I've read.
But that's fine. I'm okay with that.
It's not doable. However, since Ethan is the cheap and dirty gamer, and we all love the humble indie bundles, mm-hmm. they just started doing humble indie book bundles. They're ebook bundles. They are PDF friendly. They're e-reader friendly, and they are awesome. I went ahead because, you know, at least in this case, you can use the sliders to determine how much of your money goes to charity. I went ahead and paid him $25, and I got books from Cory Doctorow and Neil Gaiman and somebody whose name is completely escaping me right now. It was incredible.
They have their albums.
No, you don't. They don't play music. It is one of the best deals I've ever gotten because they just released several more e-comics to go with it. I got five more books, including stuff from Penny Arcade, Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal, and XKCD.
I might like these books.
Yeah. Yeah, they have pictures. it is just awesome. Neil Gaiman's one of my favorite authors, and then you get all some other authors I'd never heard of who are just blowing my mind. And I think the asking price is $11. If you pay more than the $11, that's cool. You can you get all the other the DLC, if you will.
language.
Like missing chapters or like maybe a chapter halfway in the middle that you can go to distract yourself.
Yeah.
No, exactly. No. See, that chapter, they snuck that in there originally. It just had the invisible ink that on had like a time release.
Sometimes I wonder about that when somebody doesn't have their ebook formatted for black background, white text. In addition to which, I got The Avengers, and I pre-ordered it, and I got it on Blu-ray. But you can't just order Blu-ray. Now, no. You have to order it on Blu-ray with the normal DVD plus the 3D Blu-ray DVD plus the ultraviolet DVD.
That movie's terrible.
It is.
Hey,
I guess
I love that movie. No, I'm just kidding.
I guess the bonus is that at least I have a Vudu account, so I can download it into my Vudu account. But whatever.
I didn't know that. Cool.
Yeah, ultraviolet and Vudu are linked.
Huh. No LaserDisc copy though.
No,
you should get that.
Wouldn't fit in the box.
It's the thing of the future.
But I've seen The Avengers 3 times now since it came out on Blu-ray. And it is just awesome. I think it is fair to say that it is the best superhero movie ever made. Sorry, Chris Nolan.
Whoa.
Yeah, Joss Whedon.
I can't even compare him.
Well done, buddy.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's actually honestly, that's my favorite part. Is just that Joss Whedon kind of gets to stick it to everybody now. Like as far as he could work, I want him to like his next project just to be something just completely off the wall. Like just dumb as hell, just him getting whatever he wants to do and just sticking it to him. And
I want 18 or no, I want a 24-hour movie with of nothing but Firefly.
Yeah,
it's just 24 episodes of Firefly.
It's just a 3-hour-long movie of a conversation with him and Nathan Fillion, And then, like, in the middle of it is a trailer for, like, the fake movie that they actually promoted.
I think my favorite thing about that was Mike Birbiglia had a movie come out. He's a stand-up, if you don't know. Pretty clean. Called Sleepwalk With Me. So Joss Whedon did a bit where he plays, like, the evil overlord, being like, don't go see Mike Birbiglia's movie. And then Birbiglia had a whole bit where he was like, we can crush the Avengers!
It was awesome. You should probably go look it up on YouTube, because it's way funnier on YouTube than if I just tell it to you badly.
I don't know. I think you have a career in describing funny YouTube videos. I think there's an audience for it.
You should make a YouTube channel based on that.
Yeah, it'll be like no punctuation, except it'll be called No Detail and No Laughs.
A YouTube channel just to describe other YouTube videos.
So, the other thing that happened, well, I mean, lots of other things have happened. But entertainment-wise, one of the other things that happened is I finally went ahead and got season 5 of Supernatural. Mm-hmm. Because Sam and Dean are just hunky. And I realized season 5 is hands down, it has more of my favorite episodes than any other season. It is really good. And because I hadn't watched it in a while, I watched the, I don't know, what's that bit before, like, the show actually starts, before the credits? Like, the teaser?
Yeah.
Whatever the hell that is. And then in Supernatural, when they're doing, like, they do the teaser and then they do, like, a previously, except instead of previously, they do then. And then they play some awesome 70s rock.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, well, they used some Boston.
Oh, okay.
Boston was on sale for $5 for the album Boston on Amazon, and I downloaded it, and I rocked out all day to Boston at work. I listened to that album like 4 times.
Hey,
Boston self-titled, download it tomorrow, because it is awesome.
I'm not even a classic rock fan, but I can 100% stand behind that. And also, for Spotify users, just do a search for Supernatural soundtrack, and There are a couple of users out there that have put together playlists of every song that has appeared on the show. It is fantastic driving music.
I was going to say, if you ever need to drive from like Freeport, Maine to San Diego, and you can maintain that data connection, there you go. Spotify Supernatural. You're done.
Pretty impressive.
Oh, man.
Bob Seger, Boston, Journey, like all the...
I know the best.
Not one word, but.
The best episodes are. They definitely do it the first and last episode of the season, and I want to say they probably do it in the middle episode. But like the recap, the like true recap intros, that's when they bust out their major almost like theme songs and.
Foreigner, Boston, Journey.
I think
some Journey.
I just watched the intro. I just watched the first episode for the new season, and it. As soon as they do that, I'm just like, so I'm in the mood for Supernatural. It never.
You want to headbang a little bit and hold, pump your head fist and be like, yeah.
I was gonna say, I'm way behind, but I see that show a lot, like X-Files, is that I love it when they're off topic. I hate the storyline they try. It's just, it's awful, but I love that show. And that's, I can't believe it's still going on.
Know,
it's good. Like I'm happy.
It was only written
just,
for a five season arc. Mm-hmm. And it was written for 5 seasons.
I was waiting for 4 and they stretched it to 5.
Well, it was written through the end of the apocalypse.
Right.
And then they went, we want more, and then went, okay.
Yeah. What's on 7 now? Is it?
It's on 8.
Yeah.
It's on 8.
I'm behind.
Wait, it's on 8?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, we're on 8.
I just caught up to it, so this is my first season watching it live. So that's definitely because, like you were saying, season 5 is the favorite season. Like I was just flying through those episodes. I can't differentiate between the seasons.
Dude, the Trickster episodes are the best.
Oh, yeah, I love the Trickster.
Yeah.
I actually took some pride in introducing my girlfriend to the Silent Hill movie because. It finally showed up on Amazon streaming. Like
the movie's horrifying.
You couldn't even purchase it prior to this, and it always baffled me. I was like, I don't care about renting it. I'll give you $10 for this movie, mm-hmm. because 2/3 of this movie is fucking fantastic.
mm-hmm.
And I was trying to get amped up for the new release, even though every trailer I see for it tries to push me away. But yeah, I love the intro to this movie, and it hooked Megan just as much, and because she always likes movies with creepy children, even though she really actually hates movies with creepy children, so this was perfect. And man, my favorite part about the Silent Hill movie is that it's rated R. I mean,
yeah.
they're
they
react a little bit more naturally to instances, and the gore just it hits you when it needs to hit you. And man, still, when Pyramid Head rips the skin off of that chick, it is just, oh man,
it's awful. That really. I mean, I've seen some gory movies. I think that was the first time. I mean, in Hellraiser, at one point, you know, someone's skin came off. But I mean, I did not see that coming.
Yeah,
But that was one of the better. I mean, that's a video game movie that no one talks about. All video game movies suck. I know I've said that, and it's true for the most part. But that was a pretty good movie.
It was most horrifying.
That was
a great scary movie. I remember watching that, being like, I mean, it scared me. Like, it was like the scene when she like lights the lighter, and there's the creepy jointless thing.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and I mean, even if it didn't do any of the fan service, which it did, it didn't feel like it had to be a fan service movie, which is why I think it was successful.
I mean, you felt like the guys that made it actually cared about what Silent Hill was, and
as opposed to the people that did Resident Evil, who just thought, you know, let's put everything that has ever been in a Resident Evil game and but confuse everybody.
And honestly, some of the sense.
I liked the first three.
Well, the first Resident three Evil were movies. The first two were okay.
No question.
Third one.
Just one. I think its flaws really—it may just be the flaws of the Silent Hill story in general, not just the movie. Like, as far as just, it kind of just tails off at the end, and it goes on for a little bit too long. But it's still—it may be the best video game movie. I feel like I'm missing one, an obvious one that like has bridged the gap as far as, yes, it's technically video game based, but as far as classic video game movies go, I think this is the closest we've gotten as far as being true to the source material and being entertaining.
Double Dragon.
Yeah, that's not what I was forgetting. One thing I didn't mention on Retro City Rampage is its fantastic soundtrack. Jake Kaufman, also known as Vert, did a lot of the work on it, and I've been listening to his Bandcamp channel a lot recently, kind of chiptunes-esque, but he does a good job of almost making callbacks to classic game themes, but making them his own. So, you know, it's like, that reminds me of the Contra theme song, or that reminds me of the Metal Gear, the original Metal Gear song. And like I said, I don't like to work with music with lyrics or anything like that, so chiptunes is always the route I take, and after playing Retro City Rampage, the soundtrack stood out, and it's on Bandcamp, so I recommend checking it out. Beyond that, obviously kind of in a horror mood lately because it's October, I have to give a shout-out to Patrick Klepek at Giant Bomb, who's put together his 31 Days of Horror list. I'll put a link to it that he put out right at the beginning of the month, and he's kind of updating the 31 movies he's watching this month. They vary in quality, but it's kind of a fun list to go through, and most of them are available on Netflix. And one of the ones on the list that I'm hoping to track down is it's just called Rec, or Record, short for Record. It's what Quarantine was based off of, but apparently the original,
it's better.
Yeah.
So I've seen both, and the Spanish version is better. Just be aware you have to read, so Lacey, don't watch it.
And then along those lines, Megan actually started watching Insidious, and I caught the middle half. I walked in a quarter way in the movie and left three quarters of the way in the movie, and I fucking loved it, because I knew Ethan has talked about this before, that he really enjoyed the movie up until basically the ending. So I have resolved not to watch the ending, because I was really entertained with what I've seen.
It is as if somebody else walked in and said, "I got you, I got it. Let me finish this off, please." And they're like, "Just let him finish the movie. He'll be fine." Yeah.
And it's not.
Yeah. Speaking of Insidious, I think an orb just flew behind me. Did you see that little piece of light? Huh.
Wait, what was Insidious? It's a horror movie.
It was a kid who goes like catatonic, or you know, or catatonic state.
Yeah.
But he's actually haunted. And
yeah.
Borderline possessed, and the family has to figure it out and deal with it.
great concept up until the end. Just don't watch the end.
Yeah.
Just cut, you know.
Ethan, what about your threesomes?
My threesomes, well, my first threesome is the season 3 premiere of The Walking Dead. Holy shit.
Who's
Welcome
happy?
Back, Walking Who's Dead.
Happy? Woohoo!
I
you
thought
can't see this.
That,
we're all giving the screen double thumbs up.
This is a show that I continue to be impressed with. I think season 2, you know, I've heard people say it's kind of slow. It lost some people. That's all character development, friends. All character development. Because what you don't realize is about to happen in season 3 is that the most fucked up things you can remember from the last few seasons of the show don't mean shit. If it sticks to the graphic novels slightly, which it has, your world's going to be turned upside down. And based on the amount of gore and just, you know, insane, just fucking zombie ass kicking that happens in this episode. Just wait.
It also made up for everybody that was complaining about like kind of the lack of zombie action of the last season, all in one episode. Like they're kicking ass, and I love it. I love it when I can cheer Rick on, when I'm just like 100% behind the guy, because he just has these moments where you question his decision making and his resolve, and shit has happened to him in between seasons 2 and 3, and. Yeah. He's an ass kicker right now, and I had a lot of fun with this episode.
Well, yeah, and what I'm really looking forward to is that, you know, that idea of desperation, it gets more intense, and you meet people. You may have thought you met a few people in the past in the show that were a little bit mean, a little bit bad. Not even close. Like, the fucked up level is going to go way up, and it's going to be great. And I think a lot of people are going to be really disturbed by the end of it, and that's Yay. Okay, because that's what it's about. So look forward to the rest of the season. I definitely think that they've done a great job with that show. I am surprised at the kind of shit they can show on AMC. I guess I don't know. Great show.
Yeah,
great show. I want to talk about 21 Jump Street, which is the movie. The movie based on the television show. Oh my god!
So it's good.
It's my favorite movie.
Oh my god!
Probably of all time right now. Like buddy comedy. I have a lot of different genres I look into. That movie's fucking hilarious. It has one of the best like main theme song suites of any movie, and if you listen to it out, you wouldn't know it was a 21 Jump Street. It's intense. It's fucking epic. You know, Channing Tatum he's hilarious. He's funny. Like, if that guy wasn't in like Love Stories and G.I. Joe, he could be in fucking comedies. Like, on a regular, he'd have to be a stupid guy, but I mean, it'd be great. Like, I love action comedies. I love the buddy film, and this is like the best of both worlds. And I keep watching it. I think I've watched it 3 times in the last week. So, I kind of feel like maybe I'm the third, you know, between him and Jonah Hill. I don't know. Like, in my mind, like, that's what I'd like to be. But yeah, that's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, you know, if your sense of humor is one that takes a whole lot of thought and doesn't have a whole lot of 80s references to grab onto, you probably won't like it. But I loved it. It was awesome. Finally, we went on a trip. We went to Dresden in Germany, which was one of the most bombed locations in Germany and in Europe, I believe. And you wouldn't know it, because it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen in my life. It is the, you know, Berlin's nice. Berlin looks different. But when we drove into Dresden, it was like, oh, we're in a completely different country right now. Like, it's the architecture's great. And I'm not like an architecture guy. I'm not smart enough for that stuff. But even I was saying, wow, that's magnificent architecture. So if you happen to ever take a vacation over here, or your wife happens to allow you to, you know, tag on to her coattails while she pursues her career, I definitely recommend you visiting Dresden.
So
wait,
I lived in Krefeld for 6 months, and we're driving and I see this beautiful park area. It's just beautiful. And it's a park, obvious. There's a lot of hills, and Krefeld is not hilly. It's in the part of – well, it's in one of the parts of Germany we bombed the shit out of. But – so I say, that park is beautiful. what's the deal with that? They say, oh, that's where we took all the rubble from when you guys bombed the hell out of us. And we just piled it there and then dumped a bunch of dirt on it. And now it's like this hilly park area.
Yeah, I've heard, somebody was talking about that.
And they didn't make, like, it wasn't a joke. Like, they were like, we took all the broken buildings and piled it up and we dumped dirt it there and planted grass.
Okay, Ethan, you are from kind of an architectural hub. You realize that, right?
Yeah, I am. But Columbus, Indiana, doesn't. I mean, I know a lot of people that went to Europe. They're like, oh, well, in Europe, you know, it's not
like in Columbus. Fuck you.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's amazing to see this stuff. Like this stuff, it's like you watch movies and you see this kind of thing, and you think, oh, I'll never see that kind of stuff, and then you see it, and you're like, man. I'm a bit too stupid to be seeing this kind of stuff, but it's nice and I like it and I'm taking pictures of it and I, you know, and walking up and reading, you know what things are about. But I mean, it's overstimulating at times. Sometimes I feel like my brain's going to explode with all the things I get to see. But I mean, it definitely, like, I guess the best thing about being over here outside of being able to play video games all the time and work 40 hours a week for HorribleNight.com is that you could just fucking see some cool ass shit and eat a hot dog, you know, at the same time, and not feel bad about it.
Quite an endorsement.
Can we point out the wonderfulness of both beer and bread in Germany? The bread.
Oh.
Dude, it's worth moving to Germany for the bread by itself.
It's almost to a point where one has to watch how much bread and beer intake you have. Though, actually, I've lost weight.
You'll have that.
Yeah, like I've lost a shit ton, and I think that has a lot to do with the preservatives and the sightseeing. Hey, Dresden, thumbs up.
You look great. But friends, you can't see him, but Ethan looks great.
Oh, I feel great. I feel great.
Best looking guy on the podcast.
No question.
I think that's going to do it for this episode of Super Gaming Best Friends. We hope you enjoyed yourselves. We enjoyed hanging out with one another. We enjoy each other's company. We enjoy your company. And I think this went better without Josh Lee. Let us know in the comments. We'll catch you next time.